Thinking Basketball Podcast. My name is Ben. Welcome back to part two of the Western Conference Finals MVPs since 2001. I believe the official title should actually probably be called Western Conference Finals MVPs and Magic Johnson Trophy Winners, according to the official Thinking Basketball votes. Where did we leave off last time, Cody? I believe we were finally putting me out of my misery of having to go back and forth between saying your name and Kobe and the 2010 Lakers.
Yeah, weeks ago when we recorded part one, I think we ended 2010 when Kobe just ended his run of three straight Magic Johnson awards.
Three straight Magic Johnson awards, giving him four. He is our leader in the clubhouse. So that, what does that give him? That gives him four conference finals MVPs and two finals MVPs. And of course, in 2009 and 2010, he does the double. Who else did the double in the first half of this episode? Tim Duncan in 2003?
KG in 04?
No, they didn't make the finals.
Oh, you're
finals
not talking MVP. About MVP in West. You're talking finals MVP.
No, that's the triple. That's regular season MVP. Yeah, so 2000 Shaq did the triple. He did regular season MVP. We voted him Western Conference Finals MVP, and then he was Finals MVP. But 2001, remember, we gave to Kobe. 2002, we gave to Shaq as well. So Shaq did the double that year. Duncan did it in 2003 in the Western Conference Finals. And I believe that was the only other. If you haven't heard that, you probably want to go back and listen to that episode where we introduce things, talk about methodology a little bit, go through the first decade of the 21st century. Now we're in the second decade. Second decade, finally a changing of the guard. Dirk Nowitzki is back with the Mavs, but this time against the young team of the future, the Oklahoma City Thunder?
Yeah, the baby Thunder. The time when we were all so excited to see this trio play for the next decade together.
Yeah, and this was closer to a pretty dominant series for Dallas. I think they won it in five games. Tyson Chandler had the best on-court rating in the series at plus 11. So to put that into perspective, of the series that we have talked about so far, Chandler's plus 11, Odom was plus 11 in 2009, Oberto was plus 13 in 2007. That was another five-game series. We had 2003 Manu Ginobili at plus 20. That almost feels like it's cheating, because when Ginobili comes in the game, the Spurs were just so good. And then this is the ultimate one, the 2001 finals, the sweep, when the Lakers took out the Spurs in that clash of champions that we discussed in part one. Derek Fisher's on court plus minus in that series, plus 28 points per 100. The Lakers were better than the Spurs when Derek Fisher was on the floor. And spoiler alert, we will actually not see a value higher than that for the rest of the Western Conference or Eastern Conference MVPs after the year 2000 in any single series.
And that's why we don't just listen to one statistic when we make an evaluation about a player.
2011, this was part of the great Dirk Nowitzki run. I actually think his finals are a little overrated. I discussed that in the finals MVP redo podcast that I did recently. But here he was excellent in the Western Conference Finals. He was the leader in Basketball Reference's box plus minus but not great, at plus six. It's not one of the huge numbers we've seen. He did average 32 points per game in this series. And the thing I would say about it from Dirk's perspective is he had a monster scoring series.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say here. Is scoring-wise, 31.7 points per 75 on plus 14 efficiency, a score val. And if you missed the first episode, score val is basically how many points per 100 possessions is a player contributing just from their scoring alone, one of your proprietary stats. I think it's his third highest in his series career at a plus 5.2. So Dirk was just unconscious scoring-wise this series.
Well, he was hard for them to handle matchup-wise, and he had two 40-point games in the series, in this five-game series. The first one was really memorable. It was a 48-point game where he was 24 for 24 from the free throw line. That might be a record. I think they talked about it during the game. If you can find a copy of that game, it's an easy thing to look up. But like he was 24 of 24 from the free throw line. And Cody, you want to guess what he was from the field?
I'm guessing it was pretty solid. It was probably north of, what, 60% from the field?
He was 12 for 15, 80% from the floor. And, you know, to give you an idea of how the times were, he shot 0 3-pointers in that game. But just you know, games like that were just too much for Oklahoma City to handle. And this one was a relatively easy vote for me. I am a huge fan of Tyson Chandler. I wrote about his value at the time. And I think in looking at, I actually hand tracked, stat tracked all of the games in this series in the entire 2011 playoffs. So this is one of them. And I think you could kind of muster up an argument for Chandler here, but I'm definitely most comfortable with Dirk and just his offensive prowess in this series.
I think that's what gets tough is when you have these players that bring value in so many different ways, like Tyson Chandler with this defense, it's like, great, you want to try and make a case for that sort of thing. But Dirk, 94% true shooting in game one, 48 points on 94% true shooting. Like at a certain point, like sometimes the scoring is just too much. It's just a little too much.
Well, Dirk is also a player at this point in time that has latent value as well with his spacing. And even though he wasn't shooting a lot of threes, being a big that could operate on the perimeter and kind of, you know, play a little off ball and on ball. And when he was on ball, it was catch it up at the elbows or up just inside the arc, allowing that breathing room for his teammates, also added a little bit of value on the court as well. So 2011 Dirk Nowitzki for me. One other player actually got votes in our Discord voting. If you remember last time, we have 38 voters in the Discord community on Thinking Basketball who also submitted ballots here. And that one other player was Jason Kidd, who snuck in with 3 votes, a near sweep, but we still haven't achieved our prestigious sweep vote.
Interesting. 3 votes for Kidd. How do you feel about those 3 votes?
I mean, they just will not go all the way on one player, no matter what. I think if we weren't going to get it in some of the series we've seen, then I don't know how we're going to get it. Although there are one or two that are extremely close that we will hit today, coming up shortly. Let's move on. 2012, the Young Thunder are back once again in the Western Conference Finals against another team from Dallas. Cody, I thought we were done talking about the Spurs. We talked about them for like 1 hour straight in the first decade. San Antonio is back, but of course, this is a different Spurs version. This is a rebooted version. They haven't been in the conference finals in 4 seasons. They iterated through players like, you know, the Richard Jefferson era there and things like that. And what you ended up with in 2012, to me, is this is the 2 or 3 year period of the beautiful game Spurs, where they start to introduce more, at the time was more stuff coming out of Europe, but more space, pace, movement, cutting action screening, and guard dominant offensive play with a ton of those shooters and movers and passers. And so a lot of it in 2012 was Tony Parker. It was Manu, but in a much smaller role, coming off the bench, 20, 25 minutes a game, passing, pick and roll, stuff like that. And you even had, you know, your old friend Boris Diaw and Tim Duncan playing more short role passing, and, you know, the emergence of rookie Kawhi Leonard. It was a nice run from this team.
I think something that stood out is this felt like a period of time where, especially with Manu and Duncan approaching like the mid-30s, where Parker truly seemed to become like the main engine of the offense. It was a lot more egalitarian. Like you said, Popovich brought in a lot more of the European sorts of offensive, moving the ball around, whatever else. But Parker, more than Manu in previous playoffs, I thought became like the primary offensive, creator for the team at this time.
Yeah, you know, it's not anything close to what we'd call heliocentrism.
No.
But I think he drove more of this egalitarian approach. Manu did it a little bit. And, you know, this Spurs team, I believe they had a 20-game winning streak. Someone can double-check that. But they had this huge winning streak coming into this series. Maybe it was 18 games, and they won the first 2 games of this series. And then the Thunder, they shocked me, Cody. They won 4 games in a row to take this thing to the finals. You mentioned Parker. He led the series in our playmaking value metric, PlayVal. But when you look down the leaderboard that we put together for these series, Kevin Durant Basketball Reference's box plus minus model, plus 10. Really good number. Our back picks model, plus 8, led the series, really good number. Augmented plus minus, not a huge number, but plus 4, again, Kevin Durant. Leading scorer in the series, 30 points per game, Kevin Durant. I think a lot of people think of Westbrook and Durant. This was young James Harden, too, coming in playing that peak Manu Ginobili role off the bench. And this stat kind of blew me away. The leader in the series in net rating was James Harden. And when he was on the court, Cody, coming off the bench with these lineups, the Thunder were plus 16 per 100 against the Spurs, taking it in six. So I think we've mentioned all the big names and the potential candidates. But for me, it's Kevin Durant and his scoring kind of separating himself. And he gets my vote for 2012 Western Conference Finals MVP.
Yeah, I think Harden has the best case as like a second, like a runner up with the Thunder. I thought Westbrook's inefficiency really hurt him here. He was like 18 points on minus 7% efficiency. Like, I mean, I hate to just play it from the box score, but when you just look at that, you're like, there's really no way that you're going to compete with someone like Kevin Durant when he's scoring the way he's scoring, when he's starting to blossom into the player that we start seeing really at this point in his career.
So in 2013,
wait, Discord.
I gotta do the Discord. Yeah, I caught myself. 2012, Discord goes with Kevin Durant, 33 of the 38 votes. Tony Parker picked up a vote for the Spurs. We talked about him. And then Tim Duncan, 4 votes. That's it. That almost feels like a name which might be on brand if they actually did voting like this. That feels like a name recognition vote versus necessarily anything in particular in the series. 2013 Western Conference Finals. This is the Spurs once again. And is this the appearance of a new team? Is that a new team I hear, Cody?
Yes, we have a new challenger approaching. We have the Memphis Grizzlies making it to the Western Conference Finals.
Was that like your game of zones? Well, there's a new challenger coming into the arena.
I feel like that's a Super Smash Bros. Reference. I haven't played this in like a decade, but I thought that's what it would say. It would have like the sirens, like, doo-doo, and then it would have the outline of Mike Conley or something like that. But yeah, that's what we're doing.
That's your second Super Smash Bros. Reference this year. The first one being how Rob Williams jumps a second time. Yeah, I think that was back in January or something. 2013, it was the Grizzlies. And of course, we all remember the legendary Quincy Pondexter scoring series, don't we?
I have nothing to follow up. Just tell me what you're going to say, man.
No, Pondexter, he was like plus 20% efficiency in the series or something like that. It was a marvelous scoring performance from him. Of course, this was all Spurs.
The series that everyone brings up, the Pondexter series.
the Pondexter series. 2013, beautiful game, Spurs. And this was a series where Tony Parker, at least statistically, was all over this series, led the series at 25 points per game, led the series in playmaking value at plus 2.6, led the series in Basketball Reference's BPM, led the series in RBPM. You know, you can look at other components of the Spurs like Tim Duncan and his defense and things like that. I'm going Tony Parker, 2013 Western Conference Finals MVP.
I think that's pretty clear. And when you even look at Tony Parker comparing to himself, this was his highest back picks BPM, 27 points on plus 7 efficiency, a box creation of 15.8. So he's creating tons of shots for his teammates. I mean, this was just peak Tony Parker running the Spurs during this.
Yeah, do you have any other guys that came to mind for you, or is it also kind of a slam dunk for Parker?
I want to be honest. Going back to the 2008 Western Conference Finals, between 2008 and 2013, it's the least amount of prep that I have, the least amount of notes that I have, because I think most of those series are pretty clear for me. I didn't feel like there was a lot of other stuff to bring up. So this is the end of me being like, yeah, it's just that one player.
Yeah, this is a sweep, and this is a sweep that was legitimately a sweep and wasn't close. And, you know, Kawhi Leonard had the best net rating in the series. The Spurs were plus 18 with him on the court. You know, the closest game of any of the games in the series was game 2. The Spurs won by 4, but the rest of the games were far more comfortable. So this one to me is Parker. If we check in on the Discord community, now 2012, Duncan was picking up votes. what's going to happen here in 2013, a little foreshadowing, Kawhi Leonard actually gets some votes.
Oh,
he
wow.
He gets four votes in this series.
Okay.
This is very young Kawhi Leonard. Tim Duncan gets 12 votes, and they agree Tony Parker takes this with 22 votes. So not too much disagreement all around, which is exactly how things will be in 2014 when we come back and do this again.
2014, Ben. This is one of those I marked. I literally have it highlighted. Because 2014, Ben, this is going to be an interesting series to talk about. Because you said the beautiful game Spurs a couple times. This is, if I remember correctly, this is like slimmed down Tim Duncan. Like, I think he went on a workout regimen that really, he lost a lot of weight. He started really taking on a much lesser role. They started really swinging the ball around. That finals sequence against the Heat is just peak basketball. But then there and there lies the problem. It's a truly egalitarian offense. What do we do with a team like this that beats the Thunder in six games, Ben?
I was wondering if I was allowed to vote for Greg Popovich for conference finals MVP. I mean, he doesn't play, but he does wear a suit and he kind of sweats a lot on the sidelines. So it is an athletic activity. This was like the all-time sort of egalitarian balanced team. The bench was dominant. The starters were, there was a lot of parity amongst them in terms of role. I think the Spurs were ahead of their time. Duncan, you alluded to the weight loss. That was the year before. I mean, that was this period. So by 2013, he was slimmer. And then we get to 2014. They lost to the Heat, of course, in seven heartbreaking games the year before. And when they came back for the 2014 run, I think they were better than people realized because of some injuries throughout the year. But when they were all healthy, they were incredible. And then they have this seven-game series against the Mavs in the first round. And it's like, maybe they're dicey, maybe they're bumpy. But A, Dallas played really well in that series and they won some close games and things like that. And B, it was all downhill after that for San Antonio. So they rolled through the Blazers. They get to Oklahoma City in this big rematch of the 2012 conference finals. And the thing that I remember about this series, Cody, I guess you could say is the blowouts, but specifically game two. Game one, the Spurs won by 17. And they came out in game two, and they ended up winning game two by 35 points. But the second and the third quarter, they just steamrolled them. And it was all of the stuff we've talked about. It was Kawhi Leonard's defense starting to pop off the screen, even though he only logged 16 minutes in the game. It was Tim Duncan and him doing Tim Duncan, old man river walk Tim Duncan things, and he only played 28 minutes in the game. And it was Danny Green hitting 7 of 10 threes in just a bombardment, and he only played 28 minutes in the game. And it was Tony Parker making 10 of 17 two-point shots for 22 points to lead the way and a plus 32 plus minus when he played. He only played 22 minutes a game. It was more Boris Diaw and Manu Ginobili coming off the bench and Marco Bellinelli. No one plays more than like 28 minutes a game on this team, which makes it very, very tricky to say one of these individual players from the Spurs was the best player in this series.
Yeah, and even like game six, the tremendous game six that then goes into overtime, I think Tony Parker gets injured at halftime and he misses the second half of that game. So the Spurs close out the game without one of their primary guys. So that's even like, I don't know if you're thinking of points against these guys, but that's some more points docked against like Parker's candidacy because he's not even there to close it out. So, man, I don't know. Like part of me feels like it's going to end up going to one of the Thunder. That feels, makes me feel a little icky, Ben. Just I got really, really stuck here.
You know who the leading scorer for San Antonio was in that overtime game six win by far? I'll give you a hint. You'll be able to guess it.
Was it Manu?
It was Boris Diaw. Oh,
Boris Diaw.
26 points on 8 for 14. Yeah, this is just very, very difficult to look at San Antonio and really almost outside of like the concept of the team or the concept of Greg Popovich's coaching, awarded to one individual Spur. And of course, if this were like the ESPY Awards or something, they would just cheat and make it up. And they'd be like, we give it to the Spurs starting five or something like that. We're not that creative here. We're not going to do that. So I really agonized over this. San Antonio had six players in double figures. Six players averaged double figures in the series, and they shot 40% from three as a team. Ginobili, I think, has an argument to be their best per-minute player in the series. The thing is, if he was their best per-minute player in the series, he played only 23 minutes per game in the six games. So, I mean, as icky as it feels, I kind of feel like the Thunder probably had the two best individual players in this series in Westbrook and Durant. And Westbrook, you know, he had a ton of playmaking. Big game four win at home to tie the series. He had 40 points and 10 assists in 45 minutes. He was out there doing Westbrook flying all over the court things. In the elimination game, he had 34 to lead Oklahoma City. So, Cody, I wanted to punt on this, but I have to submit a ballot. The league requires it. And I voted for Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, that's who I ended up with. I feel like the Spurs were more built in a way to defend Kevin Durant, kind of like in episode one, we talked about the way that the Spurs were built to guard Shaq over Kobe. And I thought at the point of attack, they weren't able to contain Westbrook quite as much. So ultimately, I like that. But because we're picking one of the Thunder, I want to talk a little bit about the end of this game, because there's a couple of plays I want to highlight that are just, first of all, we have the extremely clutch transition block from Kawhi Leonard against Westbrook. Just an all-time unbelievable defensive contorting his body and stripping it from him. It's a weird-looking block. He almost, like, palms it and just, like, steals it away from him. It's crazy. But my favorite play, sneaky favorite play, there's 20 seconds left in the game. 20 seconds left, and the Spurs need a clutch basket.
Is this game six?
It's game six. Yeah. Close the series. And they go into Tim Duncan, who's being defended by Serge Ibaka, who's tremendous defensively so far. Lots of blocks. Westbrook comes flying over to try and steal the ball. Duncan avoids him. Duncan turns for one of his patented little turnarounds. Westbrook flies again to contest it. Duncan makes it. And here's what I want you all to do. I want you all to go back and watch this play. Is Duncan so savvy that he can just pretend like he's ignoring Westbrook this whole time? Or does he genuinely not see him at all at any point in this play? Because I've watched this play multiple times, and I'm convinced Tim Duncan never saw Westbrook on this play and just happened to go through his regular motions and made this incredibly clutch basket. That is my call to you. Last 20 seconds of Game 6 of 2014. Please go and watch this and tell me, did Duncan ever see Westbrook on this play?
I think the thing that this series sort of grates against philosophically is, are you comfortable giving the MVP of a series to a losing team that it like wasn't super close? Because we had a lot of blowouts, and then the Spurs, their numbers, when they had their best guys on the court, they were dominant in this series. They really looked like a much better team than Oklahoma City in this series. So it gets weird for me. I totally understand if that crosses over kind of a philosophical threshold or that doesn't meet the spirit of the definition, especially because people have been so indoctrinated with like finals MVP has to go to the winner, which, maybe we're already pushing back against a sort of Overton window on that right now. But let's go to the Discord, Cody. We have four players getting votes in this series. So Danny Green got two votes for MVP in this series.
I would have not guessed Danny Green got any votes. That's quite the shot. That's quite the shot.
Russell Westbrook got 10 votes. Manu Ginobili, 12 votes. And I don't know how I feel about it. I like that this goes to a Spur. I don't know how I feel about this. I feel like this is that name I was foreshadowing earlier, that name brand bonus credit. The Discord voted Kawhi Leonard as MVP of this series.
Huh. That feels almost like you're correcting, knowing that he ends up winning finals MVP in the next round.
Or just becomes Kawhi Leonard.
Or just becomes Kawhi Leonard. Wait, yeah. Was there no vote for Kevin Durant?
No, that's it. Those are all the votes.
Wow.
Durant had kind of a, if I recall, didn't he have kind of a bumpy series in this series? He ends up 26 points per game on 8 rebounds, but it's not the normal efficiency we've seen from Durant, and I don't know if he has any, there's like nothing necessarily that stands out about him defensively or big moments or things like that. I mean, I rewatched a couple of those games for his profile last year, but that's sort of my impression of how people probably think about this series.
Yeah, but Danny Green got votes, and I remember at the time I thought Kawhi and Danny Green were the best transition defensive tandem in the history of basketball. I don't know if that's the case, if I would think that anymore, but that I just remembered that. You couldn't go on the fast break against them because they would just strip you or block you or something.
But Danny Green got votes because he made 20 threes in the series. He was 20 of 37 from downtown in the series. By the way, if I were going to give it to a Spur, if you handcuffed me and said, in this case, it's too much. You're breaking the rules. You're making me feel too icky by voting for a Thunder. Even though he played 23 minutes a game, I think I would have given it to Ginobili.
Ooh, I was hoping you were going to say Boris Diaw.
That sounds actually more fun, although I'd have to revisit that.
So that's for anyone listening, this is the second time the Discord has disagreed with Ben, and that was back in 2005. Discord voted for Tim Duncan, and we went with Manu Ginobili, so this is the second disagreement.
This one, though, is more understandable to me. The 2005 one, I'm really putting my foot down. I feel very strongly about that. That was Manu's series. This one, I mean, I have no idea how you pick an MVP in this series. This is why they weren't handing out the Magic Johnson trophy back then on stage when these series ended. Let's go to 2015, where we finally hit a new era.
Ooh, so, fun fact about this one. This is the first series in this two-part series so far where we have two teams that have not been involved yet. These are two fresh new challengers.
Two completely fresh teams.
Yes.
The Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets.
Yep.
Of course, we know now that this was the beginning of the Warriors dynasty, and this series was, it wasn't San Antonio versus Los Angeles in 2001, but the couple games that I rewatched from this series recently, Golden State is a much better team. They were a much better team. They won the series with an 8-point per game differential in the series. And if we look at something like the guy who had the highest net rating in the series, it wasn't dominant. It wasn't like some of the series we've seen before, but it was Draymond Green at a comfortable +7 for Golden State. So new teams, but one of them felt much better.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And this was, Steph Curry scoring 30 points per 75 on +15% efficiency. I mean, this is just the ascendancy of Steph Curry begins now.
So we talked about in part one, sweeping some of the categories. Kobe in 2008 was actually the only player to sweep all of the categories, that is the leaderboards we've been kind of working off of here. Basketball references, box plus minus. Back picks, box plus minus, augmented plus minus, points per game, score value, play value, and the highest net rating in the series. He's the only player to do it. Getting that net rating one because of the noise in that stat is really, really hard. So the other six categories, we have a handful of instances where players have swept the other six categories. It's only been done by three players. Kobe Bryant is one of the players to do it. He did it twice in 2008 and 2009. There's another guy in the Eastern Conference that we'll talk about next time who maybe has done it once or twice before. And then in this series, 2015, Steph Curry did it. Steph Curry led both teams in both playmaking value and scoring value. Once again, that's just a semi-crude estimate of how much value you're imparting from your playmaking component and from your scoring component. He led the series in scoring, as Cody mentioned. That's 31 points per game if you put it out to per game stats. Led the series in augmented plus minus. Led the series in our box score model. And in the basketball reference box score model, Steph Curry's +13.9 per game was the best single conference finals series of the 21st century.
Yeah, like I said, the ascendancy of Steph Curry. And again, I don't really have notes for this one because this seemed like such a slam dunk where Curry was by far and away the best player on the court this series.
Agreed. I voted Curry, did not have a lot of additional notes on it. And the Discord disagrees. No, of course they don't disagree with us. They agree with us, but we again a series that I thought would be unanimous, not unanimous. Curry gets 36 of 38, and Draymond Green takes the other two votes.
Oh, that's really interesting. That's really interesting. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about Draymond getting any votes for this?
That's a tough one. Draymond is phenomenal. His defense is phenomenal. He has these postseason series, and we'll come back to more in a second, where he really is pops off the screen. He's everywhere. He does. But in this series, the level of play from Curry, both in terms of the way the offense is constructed, his standard value as a mover and as a spacer and his off-ball game and his gravity and just the absurdity of the scoring. And then you watch the series and it's like, it's over. Like, I'm actually surprised that the series wasn't ended up kind of being closer on the scoreboard than it was. It felt, you know, game one, the Warriors win by four. They win game two by one. But the last, you know, three games, Houston ends up winning a game at home. They win game four at home, 128-115. But just huge sections of those games, especially with Curry when he's on, feel very dominant. So I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, like you just said, this is Curry by far and away. I'm really interested about this next segment. I think 2016 is its own conversation, but after that, we're going to get into some philosophy conversations, Ben, because I think we have a few years that are interesting here.
So 2016 is yet another great time for us to stop and set up another classic series. This was a 7-game series between the Thunders and the Oklahoma City Sonics. It was the Thunder and the Warriors, where the Thunder shockingly went up 3-1 on the 73-9 Warriors. Their speed, their athleticism, their length. I mean, they had that classic regular season game where the game goes into overtime and Curry hits the shot from like 79 feet away. And Mike Breen can't believe what's happening. So this was competitive throughout. The Thunder gave them problems. They came out and smacked them in game one, stole game one in Golden State, 108-102. And then after they were up 3-1, Golden State held serve in game five. You had Klay Thompson and Steph in game six, classic Klay game six game. And then they were able to hold on in game seven. Just an absolutely amazing series.
Going back to that Steph Curry shot, that's a famous double bang from Breen, right? Like it's not like shocked, like bang, bang. Like he doesn't know what to do with himself.
Yeah. Yeah, he did not. It was the double bang from Mike Breen. Oh man, we've been recording for too long.
This 26 series again, the sixth. Wow, 26. The 26 series. Oh Ben, let's try this again. This 2016 series, Ben, I find it to be equally difficult and fat. Like maybe not the level of 2014, but man, like. I really don't know what direction I would go, because I think there's multiple players you could go with, and I would ultimately shrug and be like, yeah, that sounds about right, because it's not like the Warriors steamrolled them. Like you said, this went to 7 games, and the Thunder were up 3-1, so clearly the Thunder were out there just still dominant with their Westbrook-Durant tandem.
Super close series. The Thunder actually ended up with a positive point differential, outscoring the Warriors by 1 point per game in this series. Steph Curry was again the leader in basketball references, BPM model. That model really likes him. Russell Westbrook was the leader in our back picks box plus minus model, which values slightly different things, is more into the playmaking component, things like that. Kevin Durant tied Curry for augmented plus minus leader in the series, and Durant led the series at 30 points per game, but he had efficiency challenges and struggles against, you know, the Golden State defense. Have done some videos on how they overloaded and shrank the court, and you know, the Thunder really didn't have a lot of shooting and spacing. Russell Westbrook, he led the series in playmaking value. He was a tornado on that end, but at the same time, Westbrook was one of the reasons they didn't have spacing around Durant. You know, he didn't necessarily stand out for me defensively down the stretch of this series. I will say about Westbrook, I thought he was massive in the first 4 games. Just absolutely massive. But then Steph Curry on the flip side had a huge game seven, that I think is kind of historically kind of forgotten, and a big game six, 31, 10, and 9 alongside Klay Thompson's 11 threes in game six. So, it, you know, it's a good series from him, not a great series from him. I referenced the game seven, just his numbers on that to put a bow on it. 36 points in game seven from Curry on 71% true shooting. He also had 8 assists. And this is just like the most vintage Curry stat you could think of, Cody. The Warriors win that game by 8 points at home. Most of their players are, you know, plus 5 and plus minus, plus 9. The other starters, plus 1, minus 2. Curry leads everyone in plus minus by a mile. He's plus 18 in that game. I wasn't sure about which direction to go in for this series. This was a tight series for me. But I think based on all the things I just talked through, the game six and the game seven, I'm probably most comfortable giving it to Curry after all said and done.
So even, I don't even know if you can do play this game because there's so many other factors, but if the Thunder end up winning that game seven, do you think you would end up with Curry here, or do you think actually winning that final game gives him just a little bit more of a boost in this award?
Well, it probably psychologically gives him a little bit more of a boost, but we have to have a caveat to your question. If he plays the same way and none of the other key players do anything, I still probably find a way to land on him, as we saw by the fact that in 2014, I voted for Russell Westbrook over any of the Spurs. Now, if Westbrook were to personally have a 10-0 run that would juice all these stats and change his plus minus and all the on-court ratings and things like that, and the Thunder would win because of that in game seven, or he had a much bigger game six after Klay's 11 threes and we never got to game seven, then I think it's probably likely that I would have voted for Westbrook here.
Okay. Yeah, this is one I punted on. I couldn't end up picking anyone, so I'm going to shrug and be like, Curry sounds great.
Let's move on. Let's get out of here.
What
I don't
the
like
Discord
lingering.
Say? Discord.
I don't like lingering on the ones that I have no idea what's going on, and I don't really want to be asked my opinion about. The Discord also went with Curry. Pretty comfortable voting margin. He got 30 of the 38 votes. 7 votes went to Kevin Durant. I get that as well. I definitely get that. I mean, it's a tricky one with Durant because he does struggle shooting and has these cold stretches and is shooting into these extra double teams and gap defenses and things like that. But at the same time, I mean, he's still a fantastic player and one of the key reasons why, you know, the series was so even.
I'm going to double up on a couple of questions here, but if you don't mind, I want to take a quick detour and ask a hypothetical question here. Are you viewing someone's MVP candidacy here in sort of the same ways that you have like a corp valuation, like how well they performed across the entire thing? Because let's say, for instance, let's pretend, let's just use these two teams, for instance. Let's say the Thunder go up 3-0 and Steph Curry was out those three games. And then what if Steph Curry comes back and plays 4 straight games and they win and he's just unbelievable? Do you count those 3 losses or the 3 non-games played against Curry? Or are you only counting the fact that he was able to come back and pull a comeback?
Why are we doing this? Why are you making me do this? I want to pause. As they like to say, I want to put a pin in that and just tack it right up here on our board, and we're going to come back to it in a few years. Can we do that?
Yeah, let's do that. I didn't know if there was a great series where I could bring that up.
There's an example. Yes, there is an example.
Oh, there actually is. This is actually bad timing on my part. I know what you're talking about.
We're going to come right back to that in a second. Yeah. I also should say I misread the Discord votes. Kevin Durant only got 1 vote here. Curry got 32, and Draymond Green got 5 more. So 2017, Kevin Durant, now, I don't know if you've heard this, he actually left Oklahoma City and he went and joined the Warriors.
What?
After that series. Yeah. So this is the super team Warriors. Durant, just what a monster series he had in this 2017 Western Conference Finals where they sweep the Spurs. Durant ends up averaging 28 points per game in the series, 73% true shooting. Cody, just a huge series from him in 2017 against San Antonio.
This kills me so much, Ben. This series kills me so much. This kills me.
Why does it kill you, pray tell?
So Durant scores 27 on 75 possessions on plus 20 efficiency. Stephen Curry, his teammate, the player he just joined after losing to him in 7 games the previous year, 32 points per 75 on plus 21 efficiency.
Yeah, this is this is the fourth best conference finals series of the 21st century in our box plus minus model from Steph Curry, plus 10.2. He's plus 12 in Basketball Reference's model, best in the series by far. So even though Durant has a great series, Curry just eclipses him basically in every category, leads the series at 32 points per game, plus 7. His score val number of plus 7 is the second best scoring series by that estimate of any of the conference finals of the 21st century. He leads the series. He doesn't lead the series. Draymond Green actually leads the series in play val, so that prevents him from being one of our sweeps that we discussed that he achieved in 2015. Durant's not too far behind, plus 10 for Curry in our box model. Durant's plus 8, plus 7.5 in augmented plus minus. Durant's plus 6. So this is a great series from Durant. But again, thinking about and knowing all the numbers and the things we know about those Warriors teams, that series was just too good for me from Steph Curry. So I was going to vote Kawhi Leonard, but then he rolled his ankle. So that's a joke. Well, Steph Curry for me.
After the Spurs were going to sweep them, you mean you would have given it to
that
Kawhi.
Not just a sweep. They were going to win by 25 points a game.
Yep.
Because as we all know, every first half blowout in NBA history, that team has gone on to destroy the other team, despite the fact that last week I was watching a game and, you know, the team that was up by 20 in the first half got swept themselves. The 2008 Suns, I was watching 2008 Suns Spurs last week. And I thought of this because I was like, wait a second, the Suns are up by like 18 or 20 in the first half and they're just kicking butt all over the court. And I'm pretty sure that didn't hold up for the rest of the series. So it's Steph Curry for me.
So This is the conversation I've been saving. I could have brought it up in the Kobe Shaq years, but I was saving it for this right here. Do you think that using statistics, like a lot of these models, score val, play val, augmented plus minus, BPM, things like that, is that the best way to pick up on a player's latent value in a series? Because when I'm thinking about someone like Steph Curry, even when he's playing with someone like Kevin Durant, both of these players, they both have latent value. Right, they bring more to the table than meets the eye. But Steph Curry is just a god when it comes to latent value. So, like, how do you ever say that it's not that player that's the best player in a series? Does that make sense? Is there some other way besides looking at the numbers that you're like, oh, we can actually consider this other player because of X reason?
I think it depends on the player, and I think it depends on the series. So some players, first of all, Curry on offense is obviously probably an outlier when it comes to latent value. Shaq may have been like that, things like that. We discussed Shaq earlier in part one. But for most players, even if you're a good scorer or a good playmaker, whatever, if you can't touch the paint, break down the defense and pressure and set up your teammates within that game or within that series because they take it away, it in a sense doesn't matter that you're the best player heading into the series or the best player on your team, because if they really nullify the way you create advantages, if they really nullify your value, then chances are you're not the best player in that series anymore, especially if there are other great players. Same thing with scorers. I will say defensively, a lot of great defenders, it's the same thing. Like if Rudy Gobert is in a healthy situation, Rob Williams in Boston maybe is a better example last year, you are not going to want to come into the paint and challenge him. And so that alters what you do. That game plans, makes you game plan differently for the series. So I think it's still the kind of thing that it depends. And no, it's not always guaranteed. You're not going to be the best player or win MVP of every series. But at a certain point, when you tilt the court a ton, what we're really looking for is like, take the 2016 series where it was a closer vote. If your shot is off or your defense is exposed, you're put in pick and roll constantly, you become a tactical target, things like that, then those become offsetting factors, right, that balance out. Okay, I've got all this positive latent value, but all these negative things happened in the series. So, yeah, I it's not a guaranteed thing, but I think in Curry's case, as long as teams are going to game plan like this, he's going to have a high value floor in a series, unless he just goes out and shoots 30% or something. and takes a ton of shots while doing that.
We talked about this more during the regular season when we were talking about our 10 best offensive players, and I think we had him in the 2-3 range. But it seemed odd at the time, or it could have seemed odd at the time, because he was quote-unquote going through a slump. But he still like was being defended as if he was Steph Curry. And Steph Curry, just as an individual, as a specific anomaly here, breaks my brain in terms of, like, I don't know, and not to spoil the next couple series, I don't know how he can not win it if his team is just blowing away everyone. Like, if their team wins, and they're clearly winning with him performing well, I don't know how anyone else can get it over him, especially a teammate.
No, but at the same time, in the 2017 finals against the Cavs, like, I don't have an issue with Durant winning that. You know, because on Curry provides value by the defense tilting to him, but Durant had a significantly better shooting series, and his isolation and his three-point stuff was off the charts, and he had a good defensive series, probably had a better defensive series than Curry in terms of impact throughout the five games of the series. So I think I understand your point, but I mean, I think immediately you can see examples where if you have other great players out there, you can have situations or results that actually occur in a series that would propel them over Curry. Durant not only did it in 17, but it was a similar thing because of the matchup in 18 against Cleveland.
Okay. Yeah, I'm even thinking about a few plays in that 2017 finals where, like, J.R. Smith and whoever else just sprint out to Curry in transition, and Durant just gets a dunk. So I would need to go and revisit it, but I'm not 100% convinced on that either. Steph Curry is just weird. He's just weird. He's weird.
Discord voted for Curry here, 30 out of 38 votes. This is the one where Durant picked up 7 votes. 2018, the Warriors are back, this time against an absolutely stacked Houston Rockets team, but it's stacked in a very non-traditional sense. It's built around James Harden and built around Chris Paul and this two-headed beast heliocentric thing where they stagger the minutes, and when they play together, they're good, but it's not additive. They don't, like, get on the court together like Durant and Curry and blow people away, but they're just fine with one of them out there, and they're good with two of them out there. And then they want to fill in the rest of the roster with 3-and-D guys. So you got PJ Tucker, and you got Clint Capella at the rim, and you got Trevor Ariza back when he could still play back then, and he's out there playing defense and shooting threes, and the Rockets take the Warriors to 7 games. They go up 3-2 in the series. Chris Paul hurts himself. He misses the final 2 games of the series. There was a lot of small ball, a lot of modern tactics. That Rockets team was fantastic. They missed 27 threes in a row in Game 7. Golden State pulls away. I have a lot of thoughts on this one.
So I think, actually, we talk about Game 7 a lot, but I think lost in this was the harbinger to Game 7, which was Game 4. And the Rockets end up winning the game, like, 95-92. But if you go back and watch, the Rockets don't score their first point until 6 minutes and 42 second mark of the first quarter. It's unbelievable. So this all-time team that takes the Warriors to the brink like no other team we've seen goes through these two stretches in the same series of just, like, bafflingly terrible scoring. It's weird.
I think their offensive rating in this series was only like 104 or something. They really struggled, and a lot of the tactics back and forth with the lineups and small ball and switching were really defensive first, in a sense. I mean, when you have Durant come in, you get a top heavier roster, and Golden State loses their depth. And we're going to see that next year in 2019. Especially in the finals when Durant goes down. But you rewatch this series and you're like, wow, Jordan Bell's playing a lot of minutes. That's wild. Game 4 was one of the games I actually rewatched for this. You know, Durant was criticized for only having one assist down the stretch and ball stopping in that game. That's the game that Houston came back and stole, right? Game 3, the game before that, Steph Curry went absolutely nuclear in the third quarter to blow the game open. I had forgot about that. They got like a special Curry flurry in the third to blow that one open. And then they were down. You've never heard Curry flurry?
It sounds like a great Dairy Queen order. Yeah. I'll have the special Curry flurry, please.
In game 6, Houston's up 3-2 in game 6. The Warriors were down 10 at the half, and both the Splash Brothers. It was the same thing as Oklahoma City. Game six, Clay and Curry came out, and Golden State blew the doors off them, 64-25 in the second half. Curry and Klay Thompson combined for 37 points in the second half, while Durant was relatively quiet. There's a lot of guys you could look at here. You could look at Durant. You could look at Curry. I think James Harden has to be part of the discussion. He was the MVP of the league that year. If you haven't seen James Harden play in a couple seasons and you've forgotten this iteration of James Harden, what an amazing first step and change of pace and quickness advantage he had, and just putting people on the yo-yo. And the Rockets spacing around him, I alluded to the construction of the team, that they are so spaced out and relatively small. I mean, we're getting like, Cody, I mentioned Jordan Bell. We're getting like Ryan Anderson minutes from the Rockets to help with the spacing. If you're going to go and help on Harden in his game, he's going to kick it out and find three-point shooters. So, you know, he was good in the series, but he wasn't great. He struggled with like the floaters and shots around the rim and things like that. And I think a couple more of those buckets, if they could have fallen at a certain point in the series, might have made a difference. I don't know. It's a weird series because it went to seven, and there's this impression of Houston being up in game six and up in game seven, deep-ish into the game. But it's also, when you look at the totality of the series, I think the Rockets had like a plus 10-point differential in a seven-game series or something. Let's see. I should probably bring that up. We have access to that somewhere. It was a much more lopsided series than you would remember for a seven-game series.
And yeah, going back to the Harden thing too, going to the game four comeback game, it kind of was like a your turn, my turn sort of thing with the Harden and Chris Paul. Like that fourth quarter too, like Harden's great first step and whatever else. That was led a lot by Chris Paul ball. Like a lot of he never gave up his long or short mid-range pull-up game, but he was able to get into the teeth of the Warriors and kind of set things up. So, and you know, Gerald Green minutes out there flying around, blocking a Steph Curry jump shot. It was, what a weird time.
The point differential I was thinking of in the series was plus 9 officially for the Warriors. And in game 7 in my notes, I was kind of surprised going back at how many critical small plays Steph Curry was making, tipping rebounds, really great layup passes, a couple relocation shots. And then Durant, of course, it was also a mixture of Durant with, and throughout the series, he not only had big isolation moments in this series, but he also had a number of really nice defensive plays, especially in game 7. So this one was really tough for me. If we go to our leaderboard, Durant led the series in scoring at 30 points per game. He led the series in score value because his efficiency was pretty good. Harden led the series in playmaking. And then, for the most part, it was all Steph Curry again. He led the series in net rating. When the Warriors had Curry on the court, they were plus 10 in the series. Curry led the series in augmented plus-minus. He had the best box score numbers in the series, according to both Basketball Reference and the BackPix model. And as a result of all that, this one was a lot harder for me. Maybe it goes back to our last conversation about latent value. Maybe it's the handful of games I rewatched I watched like 3.5 games preparing for this episode. And I was just kind of struck a little bit more by all the little things Curry did out there. I'm going to go Steph Curry, 2018 Western Finals MVP.
Yeah. I ultimately wrote Curry, and then parentheses, I wrote again, KD nuclear. So I'm okay with this, which also makes Curry our first four-peat MVP in this series so far.
Yes, he's matched Kobe for four conference finals MVP, and he's the first one to win four in a row. The voting on this one was closer. James Harden did get 2 votes, and then Durant got 11 votes, and Curry got 25 votes, and I'm not surprised by that. I wouldn't have been stunned to see Durant take it. I do think there's a little cleaner or better argument, both statistically and from combing through some of the film for Steph, but this one I could see going either way.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think Curry, again, with the latent value conversation we just had, I'm comfortable with Curry being the answer here.
That takes us to 2019, and Cody, you'll never guess this, a very rare appearance in the conference finals from the Golden State Warriors.
Gasp.
This is their fifth straight trip to the conference finals, and this time they go up against a Blazers team. This was not a championship contending Blazers team, but they were able to, you know, sneak by what we have, the Spurs and the Nuggets on the other side of the bracket and teams like that. They were able to sneak into the conference finals, and there was some drama because the Warriors did not have Kevin Durant in this series. And there were some questions about what was going to happen, because not only did you go back to Curry and Klay and Draymond, that core from 2015 and 2016, but you have no depth anymore, right? There's no more, like, Andrew Bogut is a big-time starting center. Andre Iguodala is significantly older. Harrison Barnes is gone. Sean Livingston is kind of at the end. So, like I said, you get Jonas Jerebko, Jordan Bell. You get a lot of Quinn Cook in 2019 from the Warriors. Alphonso McKinney. Yeah, you get appearances from guys like this. And the Warriors steamrolled them. They swept them in four games. They had nearly a 10-point margin of victory in the series. But if I recall correctly, there are multiple games where they were like way down and then stormed way back to win and take it.
I don't remember that part of it, but I do remember it felt inevitable during the series. I don't know if you remember that, but I remember watching being like, especially after the first couple games, being like, okay, let's get this on the road.
Yep. This one's interesting because my primary impression of this series is Draymond Green storming all over the court like Magic Johnson, who plays defense. He was everywhere, averaged Draymond averaged 17 points, 12 rebounds, 9 assists in this series, 3 blocks, 2.5 steals. His defense was insane. And yet, this is yet another example of a player sweeping our categories, Steph Curry, play Val, score Val, 37 points per game in the four games, and insanely consistent. Didn't he go like 36, 37, 36, 37?
Yeah.
In the four games, sweeps all the categories again. Really hard not to vote for Steph Curry here.
Five straight for Steph Curry. Five straight. And even did it against his brother. You know, we could have given this one to Seth Curry playing for the Blazers, but Steph again stole it away from him.
This was the closest we had to a unanimous vote in the entire West. Steph Curry, 37 of the 38 votes, and the aforementioned Draymond Green picked up one vote. I should say the voter for Draymond Green has voted for Draymond Green three other times. So it could be actually Draymond Green. We should double check some IP addresses just to make sure Draymond isn't in the Discord stealing content for the Draymond Green podcast.
Have you been able to see who says what in these votings? Like, is it the same people that are just constantly being contrarian with this?
I've anonymized the names, so I don't have the names up in front of me, but I have the ballot register.
Okay.
So I can see, you know, if you say, hey, Ben, who was the guy who voted for Manu? I can see how many times he voted for Ginobili in the past, that kind of thing.
Okay. Okay.
Now we're done, right? We can wrap it up here. We don't have to do any more. There was a pandemic that hit, and that was the end of that.
No, we have the Kobe Carmelo rematch in 2020, right? Lakers Nuggets?
Why are you making me do this?
Kobe Mello? They came back? Those are the two main players on the teams?
The bubble. 11 years later, the Nuggets and the Lakers met again in the Western Conference Finals. This one was down in Florida. Of course, that makes total sense because they were in a shrink-wrapped bubble. I'm not going to beat around the bush here, Cody. You almost got me with a Kobe by mentioning Kobe and Carmelo. I just don't... This felt impossible to me. This series happened a couple years ago. I won't belabor it. We'll debate between the two guys, but like LeBron or Anthony Davis, how do you choose?
It's so wild, I think, the way that Anthony Davis is thought of, because like he went through this 2020 stretch. The 75 team happens. Anthony Davis makes it, right? We talked about this for like 3 hours. I should know this. Anthony Davis made the team, right?
Yeah, he made it.
Yeah, and it feels like I've heard people regret bringing him on there because he's been, quote-unquote, well, he hasn't been great, but he's been so bad now the last year or so. So it's like this wild ride for Anthony Davis. But when you go back to this 2020 run, Anthony Davis was just a monster, like defensively. offensively pounding the offensive glass, just being bigger than people. Just the jump shot was working, Ben. He hit the game winner in game whatever it was. The inbound three-point shot he makes? Anthony Davis was the real deal this run.
It was a five-game series. I think the series was closer than people remember. The Lakers had a +4 point differential. Anthony Davis actually had the highest on-court rating of anyone in the series at +6.5. So again, not like a landslide five-game series. And if Mason Plumlee, isn't thinking about donuts or something right before that Anthony Davis jumper at the buzzer to win game two, it's possible that this, I mean, not only does the series probably go 6 or 7 games, but I mean, with those Nuggets and Jamal Murray, who knows? I mean, we were long overdue for a Jamal Murray 65-point game at that point in the bubble. So, you know, Jokic was doing Jokic things. He didn't have the best series. That's actually probably the big one for me, is the ultimate factor. My dog agrees.
I was wondering what happened there.
Yeah. The ultimate factor here. Oh, could you not hear that insane howl?
I heard it sounded like a hiss. I'm like, are you being invaded by snakes?
No, that's what happens when I bring up Bubble Jamal Murray. that's how she feels about Bubble Jamal Murray. But like Jokic being relatively contained in this series, how much of that is Anthony Davis? To me, a lot. But at the same time, then LeBron defensively, he was so good at making decisions on the back line and communicating and reading things. And that's a lot of Jokic's success in the bubble. We saw them carve up the Clippers beforehand because their off-ball defenders couldn't keep up with all the moving and cutting. Offensively, LeBron stirs the drink. We know that. But Anthony Davis averaged 31 points a game in the series on 67% true shooting, and his jumper was just at unrealistic video game bubble levels. We're not comparing him to anyone outside the bubble here, so there's no bubble discount needed. So I can see going either way. If forced to choose, again, I think because of the ability to slow down Jokic, and full transparency, this is maybe the only series that I haven't rewatched or anything like that. It happened 2 years ago, and I don't know. It's very difficult. If I rewatched it, maybe I'd feel differently, but I'm going to go with AD.
Wow. You are going to do Davis.
Yeah.
I have it written down as being very close, but I think I ultimately actually leaned LeBron on this one.
I literally wrote, I want to see the vote. I want to see the voting results. LeBron led the series in box plus minus in our model at +8. AD was +6.5, not far behind. AD scoring value was number one in the series. LeBron led in playmaking value. We talked about the Lakers having the best net rating with AD on the court. And as I said, I think that just the difference in my mind, if forced to choose, is my impression of how he was able to disrupt Jokic in ways that, I mean, maybe like only Draymond Green has been able to accomplish in the last 3 or 4 years. I don't know. I could see this one completely going either way. Let's check the Discord.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear this. But yeah, ultimately, I think the playmaking aspect of LeBron took it over the edge to me, just because I see Davis as being much more of a play finisher.
Holy moly. Mm. This is quite a result.
Okay.
Jokic got 5 votes.
Oh,
yeah, they lost this series in 5. It was a closer series, but I appreciate continuing the spirit. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't. By the way, just we probably should have said this 2 hours ago instead of at the end. We did not provide any criteria for what it means to be conference finals MVP. Just the same way the NBA doesn't. We just sent out the ballots and let everyone vote. Jokic gets 5. LeBron James with 15. And Anthony Davis with 18.
Whoa.
So the Discord in a near split vote also goes with Anthony Davis.
But they ultimately do it. Wow. I got to say, the Discord, it's been pretty spot on so far.
Yeah, and that one, even though that one's really hard and I can go either way and I don't really want to be forced to choose, the last series, I feel like we should just stop the podcast and just, we don't ever need to acknowledge this series happened. I mean, Phoenix fans are probably mad enough as it is at us, but I genuinely, Cody, I don't know what to do with this series. This goes back to your question. Chris Paul has an insane game 6, maybe the best game of his entire career to close out the Clippers. The Clippers don't have Kawhi Leonard anyway, so we're not talking about like an elite high-level team. He misses the first two games, comes back and plays the last four games, plays pretty well in three of them, amazing in the fourth one. No one else really stands out in series for the Suns. Devin Booker is the leading scorer, but he's got all kinds of efficiency issues and, you know, decision-making question marks and defense and all the other things you could kind of nitpick about his game. DeAndre Ayton has a good series. He blips some of our leaderboards. On the Clippers side, Paul George has big numbers. I mean, I just don't know what to do. I don't know what to do here.
Did you actually end up picking someone? Did you do it?
So originally when I finished my prep and my run through and all my rewatching of games and everything, I left this blank. And before we started recording part one, I put a name in. My note to myself was, this is by far the hardest one, and it feels like it should be Chris Paul in spirit, but he missed two games. And to answer your question more directly, I don't look at that and say like, oh, okay, if the team had lost the first two games and then he came back, I'm just going to excuse that, because it's a probabilistic thing. Like, the way Chris Paul plays shouldn't really be heavily influenced by the other team getting cold or his team getting hot or whatever. So in this case, even extra weird is that the opposite happened. Chris Paul missed the first two games of the series. The Suns won them both. So Chris Paul was two, and he won two games, and the Clippers won two games in the four games that he played in the series. Add into the fact that he missed those first two games because of COVID, not even like a classic Chris Paul injury or anything like that. Feels like an exception or an excuse could be made. I don't know. That's the Suns side. On the Clippers side, I voted for Paul George for MVP of the series.
Oh, wow. You did go with the Clipper.
Yeah. Yeah. I just could not get around. So a couple things to realize. The Suns won this series in six games. The point differential in the series was almost dead even. Phoenix was plus 1.6 in the series. It's happened only a couple times in series we've discussed. The net rating leader, the on-court leader in this series, did not belong to the Suns. It belonged to the Clippers. Reggie Jackson was plus 3.6 when he was on the court. I should actually mention there's a filter there. You have to play a certain number of minutes in each of these series to qualify. We're not just looking at like a guy who plays 5 minutes. So that's going to happen a couple more times in the East. It's happened a couple times in our really close series in the West. Sabonis had it in 2000 for Portland, and Doug Christie had it in 2002. It didn't happen for 19 more years, and it happens here with Reggie Jackson. Paul George leads the series in scoring at 29 points per game. Paul George leads the series in augmented plus minus. Again, not a huge number. DeAndre Ayton actually leads the series in box plus minus. He had a really nice series, but it's a little harder for me for like these finisher types, play finisher types, to really look at them. Ayton, 18 points, 14 boards, but you know, he wasn't a monster defensively. He had a really good series. I thought about voting for him. I could see voting for Paul. Booker, by the way, led the Suns in scoring at 26 points per game, but I alluded to that efficiency problem. 49% true shooting, assist to turnover percentages almost equal. Just statistically did not have a very strong series on the Suns side. And so with all that said, Paul George had a crazy good game five. He had 41 points in game five. He was driving a ton of offense. I did rewatch a little of this series. Three games in a row with over 13 boards. His not peak Indiana Paul George defense, but still the defensive presence. I just thought the totality of that probably made him the best overall player for six games in this series, but it's painful.
I ultimately wrote down leaning George, but I remember when I was watching, especially in those first couple games, I felt like the Clippers defense was bending towards Booker so much. I thought he actually ended up with more value because they had to scheme a little bit more. So at the end of it, I started thinking, like, really, should I put Booker down for this? But I considered Ayton for a second, but again, he didn't quite have that attention. He was more like the spout of the recipient of Devin Booker getting more defensive attention, being able to take advantage of those opportunities. So I thought I actually curved up Booker's value a little bit more because of that.
It would be really clean if you could make it Booker, even with the poor efficiency, because he plays 41 minutes a game. You know, he is the leading scorer. And if you get that like low efficiency Allen Iverson thing going on where they're then creating a ton of offense and just driving everything the team is trying to do, you could see the argument there. But I don't know. The Suns didn't have a breathtaking offensive rating in the series. It was 114. And in 2021, that's, you know, a touch above league average. As we said, the Clippers, their best lineups actually looked like they were better on the floor than Phoenix's best lineup. It's one of the weirdest series. I couldn't imagine if they debuted the Western Conference MVPs last year and tried to figure out and pick who the heck was the series MVP in this one. So I have no idea. Let's go to the Discord.
Yeah. How dare Chris Paul not play the full series, by the way? How dare him leave this on the table and make this decision so much tougher?
I think this is great that we're going to end on this. This is our most exciting Discord vote in the entire 21 series we've looked at, or however many it's been, 22. DeAndre Ayton, Paul George, Devin Booker, Chris Paul all get votes. Devin Booker gets 5. DeAndre Ayton gets 8. It comes down to Chris Paul and Paul George. Chris Paul, Paul George. That's like a word ladder. Also, what did you say earlier? You're leaning George?
Yeah, I was leaning George.
Yeah, leaning George. That's like my original thought was like, is that a Curious George sequel? Leaning George? Or is that a Seinfeld reference? You're leaning George? We've been recording for too long. The Discord winner of the 2021 Finals, Western Conference Finals MVP, by a vote of 13 to 12.
Oh, wow.
One vote, the closest vote we had, and I believe the lowest vote winner we had with 13 votes. This is just impossible. I think it's fitting, Cody. They gave it to Chris Paul.
Woo!
They're not stuck with my philosophical conundrum of him playing 4 games. They can do whatever they want. So, you have any comment on that before I recap?
That's incredible. I'm so glad that I'm happy with the Discord community for this.
So, recapping the 22 Western Conference Finals MVP winners, which we'll send right to Springfield. They'll put it right up on the plaque when you walk in the Basketball Hall of Fame, so it's nice and official. Shaquille O'Neal, Kobe Bryant. Let me do it by year. It's a little cleaner. 2000 is Shaquille O'Neal. 2001, Kobe Bryant. 2002, Shaquille O'Neal gets his second. 2003, Tim Duncan. 2004, Kevin Garnett. 2005, Manu Ginobili. 2006, Dirk Nowitzki. 2007, Tim Duncan gets his second. 2008, 9, and 10, Kobe goes for the three-peat. That gives him 4. Dirk Nowitzki wins in 2011. That gives him 2. Kevin Durant wins in 2012. Tony Parker, 2013. Russell Westbrook in a icky 2014 situation. Then Steph Curry, 2015, 16, 17, 18, and 19 takes 5 in a row. His 5 are the leader in the clubhouse before we get to the East. Anthony Davis, 2020, and Paul George, 2021. So Curry has 5, Kobe has 4, Dirk has 2, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's 2 for Tim Duncan and 2 for Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. Anything else that I've forgotten to say or that you need to say before we get out of here?
This was quite the adventure to hand out the Thinking Johnsons for this series.
If you want to support this podcast, one thing you can do is leave a rating and a review wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps out a ton. If you want to directly support us, patreon.com/thinkingbasketball. All the sort of series by series metrics we've laid out in this podcast and in part one are available there to subscribers at the right tier. We also have additional content, the Discord community, and a ton more. Thanks, as always, if you're still listening after 2-something hours. We're going to come back next time and do the Eastern Conference. We're going to see if Cody's brain scrambles, if I can call him a completely different name. We started with Kobe. By the end of this, he may be Zion. We have no idea what's going on. Thanks, as always, for listening all the way to the end. And of course, I hope wherever you are, you've enjoyed this one and that you're having a great day.